You will find good game that way, Varian. The king continued to glare at where his rival had last been visible. Varian, without a word, the king darted after the worgen. Chapter 18. The Chase. The High Priestess exhaled sharply as the last of the Alliance representatives departed. She had spent every moment discussing Ashenvale's needs with the others, and had at last managed to gain as much as she had hoped from them. In return, Tyronda had promised what she could of increasing Darnassus's support for various requirements of the Allies' homelands. She had also worked to manipulate various deals between the different factions, achieving more in a few desperate hours than in months of negotiation. But will it be enough to save Ashenvale? She wondered as she paused to drink some water. One of her attendants entered. General Chandris seeks an audience. The fact that Chandris had not simply walked in meant that she understood how hard the High Priestess had been working on matters. The general was obviously concerned that her adopted mother might not be up to dealing with one more situation. She had underestimated Tyronda. Send her in, of course. Chandris bowed her head as she entered. Forgive me if this is a bad time. This is an appropriate time. You come with a status report? Yes. I think that we can get a fleet off by tomorrow midday. Our swift response force makes that possible. A force you put together for just such an occasion, Tyronda said with pride. Months prior to the cataclysm, Chandris had proposed the prepared and prearranged force in view of elements of the Horde already battling with the Night Elves in Warsong Gulch. 6 ships capable of carrying a full contingent of sentinels, mounts, and supplies were put on constant call, with everything cycled on a monthly basis to keep all fresh and ready. And now they were needed. I but followed your lead, Chandris pointed out. You mentioned previously that, after past events, we needed to be ready rather than reactive. What about additional strength? The High Priestess asked, not wishing to take any credit for what she fully believed was Chandris's accomplishment. 4 more ships can sail within a week. That is good news. I hope I have some for you. I have been able to secure assistance from the rest of the Alliance in one form or another. Most will offer military might, others supplies. Chandris smiled savagely. The Horde will rue their ambition. Perhaps. Something you know. A vision from Ilum. The High Priestess shook her head. No. No more visions. Merely a feeling on my part. And not a good one. What is it? The Horde knows full well that we can muster strong reinforcements. They must be following a strategy unlike any previous. Chandris was not impressed. Whatever they have in mind, I will be ready for it. Tyronda put a motherly hand on Chandris's shoulder. You know my faith in you is absolute, but I have come to a decision. I will be joining you. I will be leading this expedition. The other Night Elf did not show any disappointment, only understanding. You also had to make promises to some of our allies, promises that require you to go to Ashenvale to see them through. Your eyes are as good as ever. I only agreed to most of that a little bit ago. It makes sense, especially if we need to keep them from arguing among themselves. Chandris held up a parchment that she had brought with her. As I thought, anyway, that it would be the case. I have got all you need jotted down here. Might be good if we go over it. The High Priestess smiled proudly. Thank you, Chandris. Thank me if we survive this. The younger Night Elf moved to the table and spread the parchment open. It proved much larger than it had first appeared, and there was hardly an empty space upon it. Chandris had made the most use of the parchment, and with necessity. The reinforcing of Ashenvale required great consideration, and all of it quickly. And as Tyranda bent over the parchment and started to listen to her adopted daughter, she prayed to the Mother Moon that there would be time enough. Varian caught wind of the Worgen long before he saw the first. He knew that they could not smell his scent yet, for the wind blew toward him. The king also knew that they did not hear him either, despite their acute senses. The curse might have given the Gilneans heightened senses, but they had not had the years to hone them as he had. They were still basically who they had been, while he had a lifetime of experience. Those who accompanied Gen included other surviving members of the nobility, male and female. However, in addition, favored officers and Gen's own personal staff and guards would also be included in the royal hunt. Aside from Gen, the guards would be the ones that Varian would have to watch out for most. Although the Gilnean monarch was their first priority, in what was considered a safe land, the soldiers would also probably have some leeway in pursuing the prey. That meant that Varian would actually be competing against several rivals, which suited him just fine. Varian had only one real reason for following. Malfurion's plot had had the opposite effect. Varian had decided to take the Archdruid's suggestion and use it to embarrass Gen in front of his own people. The Gilneans would see that their vaunted leader was still a failure who would only bring them to further ruin. The idea that by shaming Gen, Varian wanted to assuage his own sense of failure had crept into the Lord of Stormwind's mind, but he had quickly and soundly buried that thought deep. All that mattered was putting the King of Gilneas in his place. A sleek form darted among the trees to his left. One of the younger Worgen. Varian used the momentary observation to judge the creatures. The Worgen moved more fluidly than he had first estimated, but the king saw flaws of which he could take advantage. The Worgen glanced back at him. Initial surprise gave way to a reaction Varian found odd. The long ears of the other hunter straightened, and Varian had the sense that not only was the Worgen studying him, he was also seeing something that was not readily apparent to the king. The Worgen briefly ducked his head low as he ran, a sign that Varian had recognized among Gen's followers as one of respect for a pack member of higher status. The young Worgen vanished among the trees, but not because he outpaced the Lord of Stormwind. Varian ran as quickly and with as much litheness as his momentary companion. He bared his teeth as he imagined the nearby pack pursuing its prey, and increased his pace in order to better his chances of joining the chase before it was too late. He knew that the pack would not hunt too far apart from one another. Their lupine tendencies would make the Worgen follow certain traits that Varian understood very well. Gen Greymane would rue his audacity, the younger monarch decided with much satisfaction. Better if he had stayed in hiding. Something he's good at. The brush ahead shook. Varian immediately froze. A doe rushed past him. She was small, barely adult. Varian could smell her surprise and fear. He almost fired, then held off. He had no time for his own hunt, no matter how much the urge to give chase swelled within him. What Varian wanted was to follow Gen's prey and show that he could take it even when his rival knew that he was there. Varian slipped behind a tree just as another Worgen burst through in pursuit of the doe. The king recognized the Worgen's markings. Edric. Gen's servant moved with more assurance than the other male Varian had seen. Not a surprise. Gen would have the best around him, as any monarch would. Edric paused. The Worgen sniffed the air. Varian watched as the other hunter turned his direction. A slight movement in the opposite direction caught Edric's attention. The doe, acting only on her instincts and unable to meld those with common sense, had chosen an inopportune time to begin running again. The worgen lunged after her. Varian waited for a moment, then stepped from the tree. If Edric was here, the Lord of Stormwind considered, then his master could not be far. The bow once again ready, Varian moved in the direction from which Edric had come. The worgen hunted as a pack, to a point. Being also men, those like Gen would seek their individual kills. Varian retraced Edric's path, moving through the brush as readily as the worgen. His eyes constantly surveyed the vicinity, and his ears and nose sought signs of his prey. And at last he saw a worgen who could only be the Gilnean king. Gen flung himself after a massive boar with tusks so sharp and strong that if the animal turned to face the worgen, Gen would truly risk death. At the moment, though, the boar thought only of flight. Gen, however, was fast gaining. He ran sometimes on only his legs, but other times used his hands, too. With a litheness that Varian had not even seen from the much younger Edric, the veteran ruler closed on the boar. Having measured the situation, Varian entered the fray. Although without the benefit of the curse, he moved with all the skill and pace of one who had survived more critical struggles than surely all the worgen combined. Yet it was more than merely the reflexes of a former gladiator that served Varian now. Another force guided him, drove him in among the worgen as if he were one of their own and not simply a man. Others in the past had called him Logosh, and at that moment, that name was more true of him than the one with which he had been born. Growls greeted him as he moved out into the open. Two raven-black worgen, one a female with a narrower snout, leapt toward him from the trees beyond Gen. Their appearance did not surprise Varian. He had already marked them as guards. Ahead, Gen's ears pricked up as he heard the warning growls. He glanced to his side and saw Varian with the bow. Varian purposely ignored his rival, instead following the boar's trail. Out of the corner of his eye, he noted Gen's sudden understanding of just what the Lord of Stormwind intended. With a challenging growl, Gen pulled up. Only then did Varian also stop. "So," snarled the worgen, "you've come to prove yourself my better after all." "I'll always be your better, Gen." "Rubbish! You can only imagine the powers that the curse has given us. Powers beyond mere humans. Powers do outbrag anything," interjected Varian. "At least that's all I've seen thus far." The other two worgen neared. Gen angrily waved them off. "Don't know why I ever sought your approval for our people. If the rest of the Alliance chooses to follow you down your doomed path, then so be it." Varian ignored the insults. "My quarry's running hard. You can stay and blather all day if you like, but I'm moving on. I've a meal to catch."
"Your quarry? You jest,"
Gen sniffed at his opponent.
"You think you can take him from me? Listen to me, Varian Wrynn. The curse more than heightened our senses. We see things that no normal human can. Some call you Logosh. Though that they use a Torahe title for you, I find ironic. Still, it is but another name for Goldrin, as we have come to know our patron spirit since our transformation. I saw the aura of that spirit around you the first moment you arrived at the banquet. And even though you gave every indication of crushing our hopes then, I still held out for our chances because I could see his touch upon you as if it were your own skin."
Although he showed no sign of it, Varian was briefly unnerved by Gen's revelation. He had gratefully accepted the name when given to him, but had always thought it just an honor. Now Gen claimed that the wolf spirit's essence, or something, touched Varian. Ignorant of the effect of his words, the king of Gilneas went on. But even if Goldrin has blessed you, you're still Varian Rin. And that's why you stand as much a chance of taking my prey as you do of lifting the Greymane Wall with your bare hands. And with that, Gen Greymane rushed off after the boar. Varian followed without hesitation. He saw that Gen had some advantage in speed, but if the king of Gilneas indeed thought his rival less adept at the hunt than the worgen, it was because he had not seen Varian in pursuit of prey. Instincts that no ordinary man possessed overtook the Lord of Stormwind again. He smelled not only the scents of the worgen, but even through those many smells that of the boar. Sharp hearing differentiated between the sleek, subtle sounds of the worgen moving through the forest and the more rushed charge of the huge animal they chased. Varian eyed the landscape before him, instantly understanding the lay of it. He altered his path from that of his rival and rushed toward the south, then turned again. As he had estimated, the land rose up against Gen, slowing him a few precious seconds. Barely breathing hard, Varian scurried down the other side. He knew from so many past hunts that the boar would be in need of a pause, and he had a very good notion of roughly where. An exhilaration filled Varian as he pursued the hunt, an exhilaration that had nothing to do with besting Gen. He felt more alive than he had in months. The pain of Anduin's abrupt departure still remained, but the constant exertion, the need to keep his attention focused so hard on the quarry, enabled Varian to better tolerate the terrible loss. He spotted a shape far ahead that was no worgen. The huge boar stood frozen, either hoping that its stillness would keep it hidden from the hunters, or simply finding itself unable to choose what to do next. The boar suddenly moved. Varian swore under his breath. The boar was racing up toward where Gen would likely appear. Somehow Varian had spooked the creature even from so far away. It was not typical of his hunts, and to the younger king now was the worst possible time for him to make such a mistake. But Varian did not give in to defeat. He still had the chance to outwit his rival. More important, the bow gave him an advantage in distance, assuming that he utilized his skill to its utmost. Varian rushed up behind the boar. Twice he almost had his shot. The second time the boar turned in a direction that the veteran hunter had not expected. It forced the animal to scramble over unsteady ground, providing both pursuers a better chance of catching up. Sure enough, a worgen materialized a moment later, but not on the path from which Varian expected Gen. It was one of the younger ones, a dark brown male with the tip of one ear missing. Evidently his own hunt had led him back this direction, and now he stalked after prey that he did not know had been chosen by his master. And Varian. The boar twisted as it struggled up a hill. The young worgen closed on the animal. Of Gen there was yet no sign, but Varian had to assume that he would be there at any moment. He aimed. A good shot. A very good shot would down the boar before the young worgen could catch it. At that moment, the boar turned on the worgen. Caught by surprise, the Gilnean did not move out of the way in time. The gargantuan boar used its tusks and snout to toss its one pursuer to the side. The worgen crashed against a tree, stunned by the collision. The animal's decision gave Varian the shot he desired. He aimed, and then held back. The boar chose then to turn and continue its flight.
"And this is how you hunt?" mocked Gen's voice.
Varian turned to find the other king racing up to him. Behind Gen came several others, including Edric. The gathered worgen sniffed the air in the direction of the fleeing boar.
"Sometimes you need to let the prey run," Varian replied. "That makes no sense."
The Lord of Stormwind had no interest in explanations. "Shall we continue?" Before Gen could answer, Varian ran again. He heard a growl from his rival, then the soft sound of the pack following. Varian was not concerned that the other Worgen had joined in. He knew that they would leave the hunt to their lord. This was still a contest between the two rulers. Varian picked up the boar's trail. He admired the beast's stamina and strength. In some fashion he related to its struggle. Varian intended to honor his quarry and make certain that the carcass would not go to waste. That would be a true insult to an admirable adversary. The boar rushed toward thick brush that possibly promised escape. Certainly it would be harder for either Varian or Gen to chase the animal into it without being slowed. The boar was better designed to push through. Then from another direction came a new Worgen. Belatedly, Varian recognized him as the young one with the missing ear tip. The boar let out an unsettling snort. It fought to stop in its tracks. Caught by surprise, the young Worgen landed in front of rather than atop his intended prey. The boar charged back the way it had come, seemingly ignorant of the fact that it raced toward more of its pursuers. Another startled Worgen leapt aside just as sharp tusks would have gored his leg. The light brown hunter landed on all fours and readied himself for another lunge. Out of the thick brush behind him burst a bear. The huge black beast stood on its hind legs and roared, revealing a maw wide enough to envelop a man's head and sharp yellowed teeth more than capable of ripping that head free. The bear loomed over the startled Worgen, its long thick claws more than a match for those of the Gilnean. The wind was the reason that no one had picked up the other predator's scent. It had been blowing toward the bear, which, perhaps because of its tremendous size, had not been deterred by the Worgen's presence. For the young, impetuous Gilnean, that meant that the hunter had now become the prey. Instinct commanded Varian, who immediately fired. However, the bear turned as he did, and the arrow struck the shoulder. The wound more outraged the ursine beast than slowed it. It continued to focus on the nearest enemy. The young Worgen moved too slowly to dodge the heavy paw. The blow sent the Gilnean tumbling, although unfortunately not far enough to keep him safe from the bear. Another arrow already knocked, Varian fired. The second shot also struck, this time in the upper chest. However, the bear's thick hide and strong muscle were enough to keep the creature from being badly wounded. As the second bolt hit, another Worgen suddenly leapt into the struggle. He threw himself in front of the fallen one, then howled a challenge to the bear. The looming beast roared back at the Worgen. Huge teeth snapped at the brave Gilnean. Despite the threat, Gen Greymane stood his ground. Behind him, two others seized the stunned hunter and dragged him off. This seemed to further infuriate the wounded bear, which reached for the lone defender with both huge paws. The Worgen jumped above the paws, either of which would have landed a killing blow. Using the bear's own foreleg as a boost, the lupine hunter dove for his adversary's thick throat. Claws raked at the area just below the bear's jaw. Blood splattered the Worgen. The bear roared in pain now. Yet that pain also fueled its incredible strength. One foreleg caught the Worgen as he sought to leap back. The bear fell upon its attacker. Varian had come to a decision, albeit one most men would call mad. Alone against the bear, he would have eventually downed the beast with a shot to the throat or the eye. However, the confrontation with the Worgen had made his shots more difficult, since he did not want to cause any harm to them. Therefore, the bow was of no use. Letting the bow simply drop free, the Lord of Stormwind drew his knife, and with a howl worthy of a Worgen, threw himself forward. Bloodlust drowning out attention to anything else, the bear saw only Gen, just as Varian had hoped. The human landed atop the hulking animal. Without hesitation, Varian jammed the knife into the muscular flesh. The struggle caused his aim to be off. Instead of the neck, he caught the shoulder blade. The tip of the knife snapped off, leaving an angled edge. Worse for him, he had now become the center of the Ursine behemoth's attention. The bear straightened, nearly dislodging Varian. The huge beast twisted, trying to free itself of the annoyance clinging to its back. It was all Varian could do to hold on. Even the rippling of the bear's muscles shook him like an earthquake. The king also gripped the broken knife, the end of which still had some use as a weapon. If Varian did not fall, a snarl that was not the bear's filled Varian's ears. Gen Greymane again jumped up, his claws seeking the furious animal's throat. As the bear sought to shake both of them off, the two monarchs' eyes met, and Varian realized that Greymane was trying to distract the beast enough for the Lord of Stormwind to strike again. The thick forelegs wrapped around Gen. Roaring, the bear sought to bite the Worgen's face off. Varian saw his chance. The broken edge forced him to use every bit of his strength to shove the knife into the bear's neck. Many men would have failed to drive the weapon deep enough, but not only did Varian have the might, he also had the knowledge, from too many gladiatorial bouts, of just where the softest part of the neck was. The bear's jaws were inches away from closing on Gen's face. Varian drove the knife deep, nearly shoving it into the hilt. The bear roared louder than ever, but this time there was a strained note to it. Agony did what the beast could not accomplish before. Both rulers were tossed off as if nothing. The stricken animal turned around. Varian, sprawled on the ground, stared up at the gigantic creature. The bear could still kill him. But instead the animal tried to reach with its paws for the knife. Claws that could shred a man could not even properly grasp the hilt. The bear slapped at the source of its pain several times, its breathing getting more ragged by the moment. Exhaustion and blood loss sent the bear crashing down on all fours. It rocked back and forth, still trying to twist its head around enough to bite out the knife. A figure moved in from the other side. Varian heard the familiar sound of tearing flesh. The bear let out a moan and fell on its left side, its throat now torn out. A worgen stood above the dead animal, blood and bits of meat still dangling from the end of his claws. The worgen looked at Varian. Varian nodded to Gen. The other king had done the correct thing. Neither of them bore any malice toward the bear. The creature had only been following its instincts, and it had been its misfortune to come across the hunters. That it could have easily killed not only the two of them, but also the unfortunate young worgen, was simply part of the risk when hunting. Gen offered a gore-soaked hand to Varian. Varian had heard long ago that the king of Gilneas had been raised not to accept the hand of anyone, to always stand on his own, and at first the Lord of Stormwind thought to decline the offer. Then he remembered all his counterpart had promised, and was doing to rejoin the alliance. Varian took the hand. Gen helped him up. And then the two men held their grips a moment longer, two hunters acknowledging one another's skills. Turning to the bear, Varian studied his counterpart's strike. "A quick killing blow," he complimented Gen.
"I simply finished your work," the Gilnean ruler returned. "The kill is yours. The hunt is yours."
Varian shook his head. "Hardly. I was hunting a boar."
"A man who hunts a rabbit and brings down a deer is applauded. A man who hunts a boar and brings down a bear should be acclaimed."
And with that, Gen looked to the sky and unleashed a powerful howl, a howl that honored both the kill and the one who made it. His call was taken up by the other worgen, all saluting the skills of the King of Stormwind. Gen finally finished, the howls of his followers ending with his. He faced his counterpart again. Only, Varian was no longer there. Thank you. Chapter 19. Silverwing. Silverwing Outpost had had no news in 2 days from the nearest other outposts, and that worried Sa'ura Swiftarrow. She had come from Silverwing Grove at the behest of the outpost's commander, only to find that the other officer had been slain in an ambush shortly before Sa'ura's arrival. The ambush had also taken out the second in command. Sa'ura had not intended to stay, but the only other sentinel officer was too inexperienced. She had dispatched 2 hippogriff riders, one to the next nearest outpost and the other to Commander Haldrissa. From one of the 2 there should have been some word. Either that, or the riders should have returned with warning of some catastrophe. But the riders had not returned, and Sa'ura suspected that they would not. Silverwing Outpost was on its own in the battle against the Horde. She strode along the edge of the outpost, eyeing the mist that was fast rising. It could not be blamed on Fallen Sky Lake to the south, not when it was coming from Horde-held lands. A low rumble of warning rose up from behind her. She did not show any surprise, aware of what kept pace with her. "Easy," Sa'ura said to the huge black nightsaber with her. The beast wore golden-brown armor with purple gems over its head and sides. The night elf herself was also fully armored, as were all those on duty, though her shoulder areas were more decorated with fine gold bands over the silver. Those who thought the armor more ornamental than useful had discovered, if they were orcs or other foes, that it protected her quite well while she was gutting them. The hoot of an owl seized her attention as the growl of the nightsaber had not. The outpost commander looked up to the roof of the main structure, where a soot-colored owl perched. The bird peered into the forest ahead, then abruptly abandoned its position. It descended to a waiting Sa'ura, who stretched out her arms so that it had a place to alight. "What is it, Hutihu?" she asked grimly. "Where?" In response, the owl hooted once, then swiveled its head slightly toward a particular part of the forest. Sa'ura followed its gaze expectantly. The sentries at the outpost's edge stiffened as a figure slipped out of the brush. They only calmed when it was clear it was one of their own, so to speak. The figure who returned to Silverwing belonged to a group that was not exactly favored by most sentinels. But it had its uses, and in Sa'ura's eyes some members had more than proven their loyalty. In fact, the one approaching now was so trusted by Sa'ura that she had risen up to a level of command, now serving as supply officer. Of course, her role as a scout, for lack of a better word, along with related unofficial duties, was still the most important aspect of her use. "Ileana Moonblaze," Sa'ura solemnly greeted her. "You are back sooner than I expected, and hoped." The other night elf was a distinct contrast to Sa'ura, not to mention most of the others there. It was not just that she wore a dark, corseted outfit that reminded Sa'ura more of a human buccaneer, but that Ileana radiated a presence in some manner akin to that of a wild pirate. As tradition went, those of Ileana's calling were not respected much more than pirates, even though they had been a part of night elf life for years. But the changing times had more and more found places for such as her among the trusted fighters of the Alliance. Ileana sheathed a pair of longswords she utilized in place of a glaive. With a wry smile, she asked, "You did not miss me?" "Enough jesting. What did you see?" "More to the point, what did I not see? And what did I hear?" The commander looked at her with some exasperation. Hutihu made a sound that echoed her annoyance. The wry grin faded a bit. "All right. First, it is so thick out there you cannot see more than a few feet in front. We do not go charging into it, it should be to our advantage. So we stand our ground. Unfortunately, it is moving toward us." Sa'ura had already thought so, but hearing that fact verified still struck her now. "You could have said that right away. How fast?" "Fast enough that it is good you have got everyone in position already." As bad as that, the commander thought. You said you heard something. Buzzing. Like a great mass of wasps. There is another thing. The more you go into the mist, the more it stinks of oil, as if someone lit a bunch of lamps and left them burning. Su'ura knew what that, combined with the buzzing, meant. Goblins. There are goblins out there. Ileana appeared unimpressed. The night we cannot handle a bunch of goblins is the night Ashen Veil should fall. Be careful what you say, snapped the commander, although she was not overly concerned about the goblins either. What much more bothered her was what would be marching with them. She peered upward at the tall trees ahead. The mist was not quite thick enough to obscure the tops. Su'ura had sent scouts high above to see if they could spot anything, but the forest below had been as if under a thick blanket through which the crowns popped like islands. "Where are the others?" Ileana suddenly asked her. It was a question for which Su'ura had been waiting, but had not wanted to answer. "You are the only one who returned." For once, Ileana looked a little unsettled. "The only one?" There had been three others who had fanned out into the mist with Ileana. Based on their destinations, Su'ura had expected them back earlier. The fact that they had not returned yet meant that they were not returning at all. It also meant that the enemy was even closer than originally anticipated. "You encountered no one, Ileana." "I found some tracks that went deeper into the eastern mist, but they looked conspicuously visible, and so I chose not to follow them." Very likely a wise thing. Ileana was a seasoned tracker, more so than even the other three. They had probably decided to follow similar trails, just as the Horde's own commanders had intended. "Someone has gone through a lot of trouble," Su'ura muttered, stroking Hutihu's feathers. The owl hooted agreement. "Should I go and look for them?" "No. I think that would be." She heard a slight buzzing from the forest. Ileana, Hutihu, and the Nightsaber all reacted with the same tensing of their bodies. "That is what I heard," Ileana said. "What is it?" The dark-clad night elf sniffed the air. "Whatever it is, that oily stench comes with it." Everyone could smell the odor now. The Nightsaber crouched, its nostrils flaring in disgust. "Can goblins build nothing that does not stink?" the commander finally muttered. "Or that does not have evil purpose?" "Fortunately, half the time, those contraptions either do not work or explode. And the other half of the time, they wreak havoc on us." Ileana could not argue with her there. Su'ura sent Hutihu to the trees, then stepped forward. "Archers to the ready! Lancers should mount! First lines form!" In response to the last, sentinels on foot took up positions just in front of the archers. Armed with glaives, they went down on one knee. Given the word, they would throw the deadly weapons simultaneously, cutting a deadly swath across anything in the glaive's path. Other sentinels, some of them arming powerful ballistae called glaive throwers, stood ready behind the archers. In addition to the glaive on their gauntlets, several warriors also wore a second one slung on their backs. They were there to reinforce the front lines as needed. A pack of armored Nightsabers now stood awaiting the cue from their riders, whose senior officer watched Su'ura for the signal. Faces grim beneath their heavy helmets, the riders kept their long lances pointed skyward. The buzzing grew stronger, more piercing. It was now accompanied by a grinding sound, one that Su'ura thought she now recognized. It said something for the stress of the situation that she had not made the connection earlier. After all, the goblins had been known to be cutting wood nearby. Then silence reigned again. The sentinels stood uncertain. Officers looked to Su'ura, who watched and listened for the slightest hint of what was happening. An odd, unsettling groan echoed through the forest. The night elves looked at one another, even Ileana clearly perplexed concerning the source of the long, mournful sound. To Saura it was almost as if the forest itself were groaning, for it seemed to come from several places at once. The commander swallowed. She suddenly realized what that groan meant. Looking to the eastern sky, she tried to see through the offending mist, some smokescreen created by the insidious devices of the goblins. Saura sought for one particular sight, and then spotted it in more than one place. It was so unbelievable that she could not help but stare at it for a moment, even despite the disaster it presaged.
The trees. They are moving. Hmm?
Ileana looked up in the hopes of trying to make sense of the other night elf's odd words. Through the mist, gargantuan stalks plunged toward the outpost, stalks topped by great crowns.
Retreat! Saura cried. Watch out!
Other sentinels finally registered what was happening. Archers, lancers, foot soldiers. Seasoned warriors everywhere now broke off and tried their best to rush as quickly to the rear as they were able. The groan became deafening. The first of the gigantic trees fell upon Silverwing. Even as she fought to keep some semblance of organization in the outpost, Saura could not help but bitterly admire the tactic. The horde had clearly scouted the area thoroughly, picking and choosing the right trees for their assault. They had chosen great leviathans whose path would be hardly impeded at all by the smaller ones nearest them. The crash of the first tree shook the ground like an earthquake. It also crushed part of the main structure of the outpost, and two nightsabers and their unfortunate riders. Worse, the gargantuan trunk did not stay where it landed, but rather rolled south. In the process, it swept over three other sentinels, crushing them like insects. Even as the first tree did its foul work, a second hit. Another terrible convulsion rocked the night elves. Sentinels were thrown about. Nightsabers howled like newborn cubs as they sought escape that was not there. A third tree came crashing. Somewhat to their fortune, the crown landed in that of the main tree in Silverwing, preventing the severed trunk from doing as much damage. The hapless defenders were still bombarded by falling foliage and cracked branches as big as one of their feline mounts. Saura bent to help a stunned sentinel. She had no idea where Ileana had gone and could not blame the other night elf if she had fled. They could not fight trees. How did one fend off such a weapon? Another incredible thud rocked Silverwing. The crash of timber warned that more of the outpost had been ruined. Worse, the shrieks of the badly injured multiplied. She had counted four trees toppling toward the outpost, and four had fallen. Saura prayed that she had not miscounted, though she was hard-pressed to imagine where the horde could have found a fifth to add to the onslaught. They had needed the gaps in the forest to ensure that their makeshift hammers would strike the target precisely. Dust and wreckage from the crowns filled the air. Amidst it, Saura smelled a great increase in the oily stench created by the goblins. She also heard heavy thumps, as if some giant lumbered through the forest just beyond Silverwing. "Reform lines!" she shouted, wondering if anyone would not only hear but also bother to obey. "They are attacking!" The thumping grew louder, accompanied by loud buzzing. The commander turned to the forest. Two-legged goblin mechanisms entered Silverwing. They moved like drunk night elves, and one arm of each ended in a toothed, spinning blade. Barely had the first of the shredders entered than a flight of arrows assailed them. Two goblins fell dead. One of the driverless machines spun around and crashed into a third. Saura looked to see that some of the sentinels had rallied to her cry. Behind the single row of archers, foot soldiers and lancers also attempted to regroup. The drivers of the other shredders raised the second arm to shield themselves. Sa'ura immediately took advantage of their tactical mistake.
Huntresses! Charge!
She had no idea how many there were, but the pack that coursed past her more than met her expectations. Her heart grew lighter. The horde thought that they had dealt Silverwing a mortal blow, but they had obviously forgotten with whom they were dealing. The contingent here had learned to adapt at a moment's notice. More than a dozen heavily muscled cats raced at the shredders. The huntresses readied their shields and lowered their lances, the points straight ahead. The pack charged into the shredders. Distracted by the flight of arrows, most of the goblins saw the charge too late. A couple managed to get their whirling blades up. A nightsaber howled as a blade cut into its jaw. But overall, the charge held. The lances, aimed with precision, pierced the shredders at the underarm, where they were most vulnerable, or simply managed to tip them backward. Loud crashes accompanied the shredders' falls. As per their training, the huntresses immediately retreated. However, as they did, a flight of arrows launched from the east struck. Four nightsabers immediately dropped, followed by that many more within the first few breaths. Their shields being of less effect when held behind them, the huntresses suffered even more. In seconds, the pack and their riders were decimated. A battle horn blew. A lusty roar resounded from the forest. Orcs flowed through the woods into Silverwing. The first line fell nearly to a warrior, shot down by the expert aim of the outpost's remaining archers. Unfortunately, the orcs kept coming, and now they were accompanied by arrows flying overhead. Those arrows sought out the night elf archers, slaying several and shattering the line. Drawing her glaive, Sa'ura leapt atop her mount. She shouted toward the remaining lancers who rallied to her.
"Drive them back!" Sa'ura ordered. "Give the archers and the others time to regroup again."
With her in the lead, the riders turned again on the oncoming orcs. Sa'ura threw the glaive at the first of the attackers and watched with grim satisfaction as the flying blades cut through the chest of the tusked warrior. Blood spilling from the red crevice, the orc tumbled forward, inadvertently tripping two of those directly behind him. Catching the glaive, Sa'ura took advantage of the confusion by striking down one of the pair before they could untangle themselves. The orc line faltered. The riders pushed them back. A new flight of arrows assailed the orcs. It was accompanied by a number of spinning glaives that further annihilated their front ranks. Sa'ura let out a triumphant yell. The horde was again learning the folly of attacking Silverwing. Despite the astounding ploy by its commander, the defenders would gain the day. Another horn blew. The orc lines dropped. A fresh flight of arrows concentrated on the riders. Sa'ura, at point, saw some of the horde's archers just as they were firing and shouted a warning. She planted herself against the nightsaber's neck and prayed the others did the same. However, the many cries she heard in her wake did not give her much hope. Worse, her mount stumbled, then collapsed. In the process, the animal threw Sa'ura. The night elf fell among the dead, an orc's gaping face barely an inch from hers. She tried to rise, but something held her leg down. Sa'ura twisted around and saw that the nightsaber, more than a dozen heavy bolts piercing its body, had fallen on the limb, trapping it. The unfortunate cat was already dead, which meant that she could not even get the animal to move. She managed to seize an axe from the dead orc. With the carnage going on around her, she was momentarily forgotten. Doubtful that it would remain that way long, the night elf tried to use the axe head to prop up the carcass enough to slip her leg free. A nerve-shaking wail rose over the vicinity, causing her to lose her grip on the axe. Despite her predicament, she had to see the cause. Two sentinels blocked her way, but not for very long. Although expertly wielding their glaives for hand-to-hand combat, first one, then the other fell. One did so minus her head, the other with his torso cut all the way down the middle. The doom of each was accompanied by the same awful wail. And as the night elves fell, they revealed the lone foe who had so easily dealt with them. The brown-skinned orc grinned as he looked for another enemy to smite. In his hands he gripped a dreadful axe that had an intricate series of grooves in the head. Su'ura had never seen him before, but knew instantly from the tales that she stared at Garrosh Hellscream himself. As if sensing her, his baleful gaze turned in her direction. The sentinel seized the axe again and shoved the weapon's head toward the corpse of her mount. Twisting the handle, she used the head to push up the nightsaber just enough to finally pull her leg free.
"Good," declared an ominous, deep voice. "I want a fair battle."
She stared up at the war chief, who made no move yet. Su'ura realized that he was waiting for her to stand. Once she did that, he would move in to finish her. While the night elf did not fear him, she knew from the way her body ached that she was injured inside. More important, this was Garrosh Hellscream, whose prowess in combat had already become legendary. Another nightsaber suddenly came between them. Unafraid, the orc turned to face this new foe. The cat swatted at Garrosh but did not close with the hulking warrior.
"Run!" called the rider.
Only then did Su'ura realize that it was Ileana. But her would-be rescuer had underestimated Garrosh Hellscream. The orc lunged under the nightsaber's claws. He took the axe and jammed it upward beneath the great cat's jaw. Ileana's mount yowled and pulled back sharply. Blood seeping from the wound above its throat, the animal writhed in agony. The scout was tossed toward the corpse of the other cat. Ileana struck the heavy body hard, then rolled over. Su'ura had not waited all this time. She had risen to a crouching position, trying to determine not where to flee, but how to help Ileana battle Garrosh. Now she instead had to rescue her rescuer. Although badly wounded by the war chief's daring attack, the trained nightsaber returned to the struggle. Su'ura used the animal's bravery to help Ileana up.
"That did not work as I planned," the other night elf gasped.
"How are you?"
Ileana grimaced.
"I think my left arm is either broken or perhaps just pulled."
"Then we had better hurry away from here."
"I can fight."
"No argument. We are behind the line now. We have got to get back to the rest."
The horrific wail of Garrosh's axe cut through the air again. It was followed by an angry and pained roar from the nightsaber. Su'ura did not look back. She regretted the cat's sacrifice, but had no choice. To stay would be suicide for both fighters. Several yards to the west, she saw some of the defenders again regrouping, but farther to the east, the situation grew more and more desperate. There, individual sentinels, cut off from hope, fought against one or more foes, odds too often quickly fatal. Su'ura watched in horror as an orc lopped off the head of one of her officers. The body of the sentinel staggered a few steps before finally collapsing. Elsewhere, severed limbs marked the dooms of other night elves. Now and then a glaive would go spinning past, but those signs of resistance grew less and less with each passing second. Su'ura and Ileana had managed to get within a few yards of a small party of archers when Su'ura sensed that they were not alone. With regret, she shoved Ileana toward the other defenders, hoping that the other night elf's reflexes were still sharp enough to compensate for the sudden loss of the commander's help. Su'ura barely got her weapon up in time to prevent an older orc with an eye patch and covered in maritime tattoos from cleaving her in two with his heavy axe. He was no Garrosh, but his experience and sheer determination put her on the defensive from the first moment.
"I'll make this quick," he rasped. "You wouldn't want to be around when he unleashes them anyway."
She had no idea what he was talking about and did not care. What concerned Su'ura more was that the leg that had been trapped under the dead nightsaber was now tingling. It had been injured after all, and now that injury was causing problems with her balance. The night elf followed Garrosh's trick,
suddenly lunging into her opponent when he would have expected otherwise. The startled orc backed away. Suura slashed with the axe, but managed only a thin red line across his arm. An arrow from behind her struck the ground between them. Another bounced off the orc's shoulder armor. The green-skinned warrior snarled, then withdrew as two more arrows harassed him. Two sentinels seized Suura and pulled her back to the archers. As they did, the commander heard the buzzing of a shredder. Some of the goblins had managed to get their foul mechanisms on their feet again and were tearing apart what the falling trees had not already destroyed. Suura smelled fire. The main building was ablaze, whether by the goblins or some other source she did not know. She considered taking a chance and rushing into it to retrieve some of the valuable charts stored there, but knew that it was too late to do anything. The terrible wail echoed in her ears again. Garrosh, his weapon dripping with blood, yelled an unintelligible command to his warriors. Even the goblins moved in response, the shredders forming a line, then stopping.
They are within range.
Ileana was incredulous.
Are they committing suicide?
It does not matter. Archers, fire at will. I want every glaive flying too. More and more of Silverwing's survivors gathered. Suura saw that the sentinels still had a fairly decent line of defense. True, they looked to be outnumbered, but that would not be the first time. Yet, as the first archers readied their shots, again a horn sounded. The archers hesitated.
"Do not wait," cursed Suura.
A monstrous roar burst from the goblin-induced mist. Something came flying out of the forest, a huge projectile. A rock several times Suura's height in diameter. It was followed by five more. She faced what seemed a variation of the same nightmare that had initially struck the outpost. With much the same accuracy of aim, the huge rocks fell upon Silverwing. There was no choice but to scatter. The final stand of the Silverwing sentinels collapsed under threat of a force that they could not stop. The first huge rock struck the ground just before where the archers had stood. As with the massive trunks, the area shook as if the cataclysm had come anew. However, the rocks, more focused missiles, raised up huge bits of dirt and stone that bombarded the night elves. A sentinel near Ileana dropped dead, her skull caved in by one sharp fragment. Two archers were brought down by a rain of earth. Silverwing filled with thunder as the rest of the boulders hit. Sentinels went flying through the air. Two other boulders completely obliterated the glaive throwers and their operators. Nightsabers, driven wild by the catastrophe, ignored their riders' orders. The horde wasted no time in taking advantage. Garrosh let out a cry of victory, waved the wailing axe, and led the charge himself. A few sentinels, bowled over by the latest barrage, struggled to rise quick enough to at least put up a defense against the oncoming enemy. They gave a good accounting for themselves, managing to bring more than a few orcs down with their glaives and swords, but none survived long against such overwhelming odds. Ileana was the first to state the terribly obvious.
"We cannot stay any longer. We must abandon our position."
Although she wanted to deny what her companion said, Suura could not. The sentinels' numbers were fast dwindling. Several of those still alive were wounded, and against the growing ranks of orcs entering the battle, it would have been murder to order them to stay.
"Fall back," Suura called. "We make our way beyond the river to Commander Haldrissa."
Clearly reluctant, the sentinels nevertheless obeyed. They gathered those more injured and under the protective cover of the healthiest archers and warriors did what none would have ever thought could happen. They abandoned Silverwing Outpost. The orcs gave chase. To Suura's relief, there were no orcs mounted on wolves among them. Furthermore, the few nightsabers still manageable helped carry the wounded sentinels, while the rest kept pace as best as possible. Night elves were better built for speed, and finally the pursuers fell behind. Even then, though, Silverwing's remnants pushed on as hard as they could. The others had